down. Clary's boot slipped a number of times on the damp stone wall, and she was relieved when she finally hauled herself up over the sill of the window and half-jumped, half-fell into the bedroom. Her euphoria was short-lived. No sooner had her boots hit the floor than a bright light flared up, a soft explosion that lit the room to a daylight brightness. Amatis was sitting on the edge of the bed, her back very straight, a witch-like stone in her hand. It burned with a harsh light that did nothing to soften the hard planes of her face or the lines at the corners of her mouth. She stared at Clary in silence for several long moments. Finally she said, "In those clothes you look just like Jocelyn." Clary scrambled to her feet. I'm sorry, she said, "about going out like that." Amatis closed her hand around the witch light, snuffing its glow. Clary blinked in the sudden dimness. "Change out of that gear," Amatis said, "and meet me downstairs in the kitchen. And don't even think about sneaking back out through the window," she added, "or the next time you return to this house, you'll find it sealed against you." Swallowing hard, Clary nodded. Amatis rose to her feet and left without another word. Quickly, Clary shucked off her gear and dressed in her own clothes, which hung over the bedpost, now dry. Her jeans were a little stiff, but it was nice to pull on her familiar T-shirt. Shaking her tangled hair back, she headed downstairs. The last time she'd seen the lower floor of Amatis's house, she'd been delirious and hallucinating. She remembered long corridors stretching out to infinity and a huge grandfather clock whose ticks had sounded like the beats of a dying heart. Now she found herself in a small, homely living room with plain wooden furniture and a rag rug on the floor. The small size and bright colors reminded her a little of her own living room at home in Brooklyn. She crossed through in silence and entered the kitchen, where a fire burned in the grate and the room was full of warm yellow light. Amatis was sitting at the table. She had a blue shawl wrapped around her shoulders. It made her hair seem more gray. "Hi," Clary hovered in the doorway. She couldn't tell if Amatis was angry or not. "I suppose I hardly need to ask where you went," Amatis said without looking up from the table. "You went to see Jonathan, didn't you? I suppose it was only to be expected. Perhaps if I'd ever had children of my own, I'd know when a child was lying to me. But I had so hoped that, this time at least, I wouldn't completely disappoint my brother."
"Disappoint Luke?
You know what happened when he was bitten." Amatis stared straight in front of her. "When my brother was bitten by a werewolf?" "And of course he was. Valentine was always taking stupid risks with himself and his followers. It was just a matter of time. He came and told me what had happened and how scared he was that he might have contracted the lycanthropic disease. And I said,
Amatis, you don't have to tell me this.
I told him to get out of my house and not to come back until he was sure he didn't have it. I cringed away from him. I couldn't help it." Her voice shook. "He could see how disgusted I was. It was all over my face. He said he was afraid that if he did have it, if he'd become a were-creature, that Valentine would ask him to kill himself, and I said that maybe that would be the best thing." Clary gave a little gasp. She couldn't help it. Amatis looked up quickly. Self-loathing was written all over her face. Luke was always so basically good. Whatever Valentine tried to get him to do. Sometimes I thought he and Jocelyn were the only really good people I knew, and I couldn't stand the idea of him being turned into some monster.
But he's not like that. He's not a monster.
I didn't know. After he did change, after he fled from here, Jocelyn worked and worked to convince me that he was still the same person inside, still my brother. If it hadn't been for her, I never would have agreed to see him again. I let him stay here when he came before the uprising, let him hide in the cellar, but I could tell he didn't really trust me, not after I'd turned my back on him. I think he still doesn't.
He trusted you enough to come to you when I was sick, Clary said. He trusted you enough to leave me here with you.
He had nowhere else to go, said Amatis. And look how well I fared with you. I couldn't even keep you in the house for a single day.
Clary flinched. This was worse than being yelled at.
It's not your fault. I lied to you and sneaked out. There wasn't anything you could have done about it.
Oh, Clary, Amatis said. Don't you see? There's always something you can do. It's just people like me who always tell themselves otherwise. I told myself there was nothing I could do about Luke. I told myself there was nothing I could do about Stephen leaving me. And I refuse even to attend the Claves meetings because I tell myself there's nothing I can do to influence their decisions, even when I hate what they're doing. But then when I do choose to do something, well, I can't even do that one thing right. Her eyes shone hard and bright in the firelight. Go to bed, Clary, she finished. And from now on, you can come and go as you please. I won't do anything to stop you. After all, like you said, there's nothing I can do. Amatis. Don't. Amatis shook her head. Just go to bed, please. Her voice held a note of finality. She turned away as if Clary were already gone and stared at the wall, unblinking. Clary spun on her heel and ran up the stairs. In the spare room, she kicked the door shut behind her and flung herself down onto the bed. She thought she wanted to cry, but the tears wouldn't come. Jace hates me, she thought. Amatis hates me. I never got to say goodbye to Simon. My mother's dying, and Luke has abandoned me. I'm alone. I've never been so alone, and it's all my own fault. Maybe that was why she couldn't cry, she realized, staring dry-eyed at the ceiling. Because what was the point in crying when there was no one to comfort you? And what was worse, when you couldn't even comfort yourself? Chapter 7, Where Angels Fear to Tread. Out of a dream of blood and sunlight, Simon woke suddenly to the sound of a voice calling his name. Simon. The voice was a hissing whisper. Simon, get up. Simon was on his feet. Sometimes how fast he could move now surprised even him, and spinning around in the darkness of the cell. Samuel, he whispered, staring into the shadows. Samuel, was that you? Turn around, Simon. Now the voice, faintly familiar, held a note of irritability. And come to the window. Simon knew immediately who it was and looked through the barred window to see Jace kneeling on the grass outside, a witchlight stone in his hand. He was looking at Simon with a strained scowl. What did you think, you were having a nightmare? Maybe I still am. There was a buzzing in Simon's ear. If he'd had a heartbeat, he would have thought it was the blood rushing through his veins, but it was something else. Something less corporeal but more proximate than blood. The witchlight threw a crazy quilt pattern of light and shadow across Jace's pale face. So here's where they put you? I didn't think they even used these cells anymore. He glanced sideways. I got the wrong window at first. Gave your friend in the next cell something of a shock. Attractive fellow, what with the beard and the rags. Kind of reminds me of the street folk back home. And Simon realized what the buzzing sound in his ear was. Rage. In some distant corner of his mind, he was aware that his lips were drawn back, the tips of his fangs grazing his lower lip. I'm glad you think all this is funny. You're not happy to see me, then? Jace said. I have to say, I'm surprised. I've always been told my presence brightened up any room. One might think that went doubly for dank underground cells. You knew what would happen, didn't you? They'll send you right back to New York, you said. No problem. But they never had any intention of doing that. I didn't know. Jace met his eyes through the bars, and his gaze was clear and steady. I know you won't believe me, but I thought I was telling you the truth. You're either lying or stupid. Then I'm stupid. Or both, Simon finished. I'm inclined to think both. I don't have a reason to lie to you. Not now. Jace's gaze remained steady. And quit baring your fangs at me. It's making me nervous. Good, Simon said. If you want to know why, it's because you smell like blood. It's my cologne. Eau de recent injury. Jace raised his left hand. It was a glove of white bandages stained across the knuckles where blood had seeped through. Simon frowned. I thought your kind didn't get injuries, not ones that lasted. I put it through a window, Jace said, and Alex making me heal like a mundane to teach me a lesson. There, I told you the truth. Impressed? No, Simon said. I have bigger problems than you. The Inquisitor keeps asking me questions I can't answer. He keeps accusing me of getting my Daylighter powers from Valentine,
of being a spy for him.
Alarm flickered in Jace's eyes. Aldertree said that?
Aldertree implied the whole Clave thought so.
That's bad. If they decide you're a spy, then the Accords don't apply. Not if they can convince themselves you've broken the law.
Jace glanced around quickly before returning his gaze to Simon. We'd better get you out of here.
And then what?
Simon almost couldn't believe what he was saying. He wanted to get out of this place so badly he could taste it. Yet he couldn't stop the words tumbling out of his mouth.
Where do you plan on hiding me?
There's a portal here in the guard. If we can find it, I can send you back through.
And everyone will know you helped me.
Jace, it's not just me the Clave is after. In fact, I doubt they care about one Downworlder at all, one way or the other. They're trying to prove something about your family, about the Lightwoods. They're trying to prove that they're connected with Valentine somehow, that they never really left the Circle.
Even in the darkness, it was possible to see the color rush into Jace's cheeks.
But that's ridiculous. They fought Valentine. On the ship, Robert nearly died.
The Inquisitor wants to believe that they sacrificed the other Nephilim who fought on the boat to preserve the illusion that they were against Valentine.
But they still lost the mortal sword, and that's what he cares about.
Look, you tried to warn the Clave, and they didn't care. Now the Inquisitor is looking for someone to blame everything on. If he can brand your family as traitors, then no one will blame the Clave for what happened, and he'll be able to make whatever policies he wants to without opposition.
Jace put his face in his hands, his long fingers tugging distractedly at his hair.
But I can't just leave you here. If Clary finds out...
I should have known that's what you were worried about. Simon laughed harshly.
So don't tell her. She's in New York anyway, Fink.
He broke off, unable to say the word.
You were right, he said instead. I'm glad she's not here.
Jace lifted his head out of his hands.
What? The Clave is insane. Who knows what they'd do to her if they knew what she could do. You were right, Simon repeated.
And when Jace said nothing in reply, added, And you might as well enjoy that I just said that to you. I probably won't ever say it again.
Jace stared at him, his face blank, and Simon was reminded with an unpleasant jolt of the way Jace had looked on the ship, bloody and dying on the metal floor.
Finally, Jace spoke. So you're telling me you plan to stay here, in prison? Until when?
Until we think of a better idea, said Simon. But there is one thing.
Jace raised his eyebrows.
What's that?
Blood, said Simon. The Inquisitor's trying to starve me into talking. I already feel pretty weak. By tomorrow I'll be... Well, I don't know how I'll be. But I don't want to give in to him, and I won't drink your blood again, or anyone else's, he added quickly, before Jace could offer.
Animal blood will do.
Blood I can get you, Jace said. He hesitated.
Did you tell the Inquisitor that I let you drink my blood? That I saved you?
Simon shook his head.
Jace's eyes shone with reflected light.
Why not?
I suppose I didn't want to get you into more trouble.
Look, vampire, Jace said. Protect the Lightwoods if you can, but don't protect me.
Simon raised his head.
Why not?
I suppose, said Jace. And for a moment as he looked down through the bars, Simon could almost imagine that he was outside and Jace was the one inside the cell.
Because I don't deserve it.
Clary woke to a sound like hailstones on a metal roof. She sat up in bed, staring around groggily. The sound came again, a sharp rattle thump emanating from the window. Peeling her blanket back reluctantly, she went to investigate. Throwing the window open let in a blast of cold air that cut through her pajamas like a knife. She shivered and leaned out over the sill. Someone was standing in the garden below, and for a moment, with a leap of her heart, all she saw was that the figure was slender and tall, with boyish, rumpled hair. Then he raised his face and she saw that the hair was dark, not fair. And she realized that for the second time, she'd hoped for Jace and gotten Sebastian instead. He was holding a handful of pebbles in one hand. He smiled when he saw her poke her head out and gestured at himself and then at the rose trellis. Climb downstairs. She shook her head and pointed toward the front of the house. Meet me at the front door. Shutting the window, she hurried downstairs. It was late morning. The light pouring in through the windows was strong and golden. But the lights were all off and the house was quiet. Amatis must still be asleep, she thought. Clary went to the front door, unbolted it, and threw it open. Sebastian was there, standing on the front step, and once again she had that feeling, that strange burst of recognition, though it was fainter this time. She smiled weakly at him.
"You threw stones at my window," she said.
"I thought people only did that in movies."
He grinned. "Nice pajamas. Did I wake you up?"
"Maybe."
"Sorry," he said, though he didn't seem sorry. "But this couldn't wait. You might want to run upstairs and get dressed, by the way. We'll be spending the day together."
"Wow, confident, aren't you?" she said. But then boys who look like Sebastian probably had no reason to be anything but confident. She shook her head. "I'm sorry, but I can't. I can't leave the house. Not today." A faint line of concern appeared between his eyes.
"You left the house yesterday."
"I know, but that was before... before Amatis made me feel about 2 inches tall. I just can't. And please don't try to argue me out of it, okay?"
"Okay," he said. "I won't argue. But at least let me tell you what I came here to tell you. Then, I promise, if you still want me to go, I'll go."
"What is it?" He raised his face, and she wondered how it was possible that dark eyes could glow just like golden ones.
"I know where you can find Ragnar Fell." It took Clary less than 10 minutes to run upstairs, throw on her clothes, scribble a hasty note to Amatis, and rejoin Sebastian, who was waiting for her at the edge of the canal. He grinned as she ran to meet him, breathless, her green coat flung over one arm.
"I'm here," she said, skidding to a stop. "Can we go now?"
Sebastian insisted on helping her on with the coat.
"I don't think anyone's ever helped me with my coat before," Clary observed,
freeing the hair that had gotten trapped under her collar.
"Well, maybe waiters. Were you ever a waiter?"
"No, but I was brought up by a Frenchwoman," Sebastian reminded her. "It involves an even more rigorous course of training." Clary smiled despite her nervousness. Sebastian was good at making her smile, she realized with a faint sense of surprise. Almost too good at it.
"Where are we going?" she asked abruptly.
"Is Fell's house near here?" "He lives outside the city, actually," said Sebastian, starting toward the bridge. Clary fell into step beside him.
"Is it a long walk?"
"Too long to walk. We're going to get a ride."
"A ride from who?" She came to a dead stop.
"Sebastian, we have to be careful. We can't just trust anyone with the information about what we're doing. What I'm doing, it's a secret." Sebastian regarded her with thoughtful dark eyes. "I swear on the angel that the friend we'll be getting a ride from won't breathe a word to anyone about what we're doing."
"You're sure?"
"I'm very sure."
"Ragnar Fell," Clary thought as they wove through the crowded streets. "I'm going to see Ragnar Fell."
Wild excitement clashed with trepidation. Madeline had made him sound formidable. What if he had no patience with her, no time? What if she couldn't make him believe she was who she said she was? What if he didn't even remember her mother? It didn't help her nerves that every time she passed a blonde man or a girl with long dark hair, her insides tensed up as she thought she recognized Jace or Isabel. But Isabel would probably just ignore her, she thought glumly, and Jace was doubtless back at the Penhallows necking with his new girlfriend. "You worried about being followed?" Sebastian asked as they turned down a side street that led away from the city center, noticing the way she kept glancing around her.
"I keep thinking I see people I know," she admitted.
"Jace or the Lightwoods." "I don't think Jace has left the Panhallows since they got here. He mostly seems to be skulking in his room. He hurt his hand pretty badly yesterday, too."
"Hurt his hand? How?"
Clary, forgetting to look where she was going, stumbled over a rock. The road they'd been walking on had somehow turned from cobblestones to gravel without her noticing.
"Ouch!"
"We're here," Sebastian announced, stopping in front of a high wooden wire fence. There were no houses around. They had rather abruptly left the residential district behind, and there was only this fence on one side and a gravelly slope leading away toward the forest on the other. There was a door in the fence, but it was padlocked. From his pocket, Sebastian produced a heavy steel key and opened the gate. "I'll be right back with our ride." He swung the gate shut behind him. Clary put her eye to the slats. Through the gap, she could glimpse what looked like a low-slung red clapboard house, though it didn't appear to really have a door or proper windows. The gate opened and Sebastian reappeared, grinning from ear to ear. He held a lead in one hand,
Pacing docilely behind him was a huge gray and white horse with a blaze like a star on its forehead.
A horse? You have a horse? Clary stared in amazement. Who has a horse?
Sebastian stroked the horse fondly on the shoulder. A lot of Shadow Hunter families keep a horse in the stables here in Alicante. If you've noticed, there are no cars in Idris. They don't work well with all these wards around.
He patted the pale leather of the horse's saddle, emblazoned with a crest of arms that depicted a water serpent rising out of a lake in a series of coils. The name Verloc was written beneath in delicate script.
Come on up. Clary backed up. I've never ridden a horse before.
I'll be riding Wayfarer, Sebastian reassured her. You'll just be sitting in front of me.
The horse grunted softly. He had huge teeth, Clary noticed uneasily, each one the size of a Pez dispenser. She imagined those teeth sinking into her leg and thought of all the girls she'd known in middle school who'd wanted ponies of their own. She wondered if they were insane.
Be brave, she told herself. It's what your mother would do. She took a deep breath.
All right, let's go. Clary's resolution to be brave lasted as long as it took for Sebastian, after helping her into the saddle, to swing himself up onto the horse behind her and dig in his heels. Wayfarer took off like a shot, pounding over the graveled road with a force that sent jolting shocks up her spine. She clutched at the bit of the saddle that stuck up in front of her, her nails digging into it hard enough to leave marks in the leather. The road they were on narrowed as they headed out of town, and now there were banks of thick trees on either side of them, walls of green that blocked any wider view. Sebastian drew back on the reins, and the horse ceased its frantic galloping, Clary's heartbeat slowing along with its pace. As her panic receded, she became slowly conscious of Sebastian behind her. He was holding the reins on either side of her, his arms making a sort of cage around her that kept her from feeling like she was about to slide off the horse. She was suddenly very aware of him, not just the hard strength in the arms that held her, but that she was leaning back against his chest and that he smelled of, for some reason, black pepper. Not in a bad way. It was spicy and pleasant. Very different from Jace's smell of soap and sunlight. Not that sunlight had a smell, really, but if it did. She gritted her teeth. She was here with Sebastian on her way to see a powerful warlock, and mentally she was maundering on about the way Jace smelled. She forced herself to look around. The green banks of trees were thinning out, and now she could see a sweep of marbled countryside to either side. It was beautiful in a stark sort of way. A carpet of green broken up here and there by a scar of gray stone road or a crag of black rock rising up out of the grass. Clusters of delicate white flowers, the same ones she'd seen in the necropolis with Luke, starred the hills like occasional snowfall.
How did you find out where Ragnar Fell is? She asked as Sebastian skillfully guided the horse around a rut in the road.
My aunt Ailidie. She's got quite a network of informants. She knows everything that's going on in Idris, even though she never comes here herself. She hates to leave the Institute.
What about you? Do you come to Idris much?
Not really. The last time I was here, I was about 5 years old. I haven't seen my aunt and uncle since then either, so I'm glad to be here now. It gives me a chance to catch up. Besides, I miss Idris when I'm not here. There's nowhere else like it. It's in the earth of the place. You'll start to feel it, and then you'll miss it when you're not here.
I know Jace missed it, she said. But I thought that was because he lived here for years. He was brought up here.
In the Wayland Manor, Sebastian said. Not that far from where we're going, in fact.
You do seem to know everything.
Not everything, Sebastian said with a laugh that Clary felt through her back. Yeah, Idris works its magic on everyone, even those like Jace who have reason to hate the place.
Why do you say that?
Well, he was brought up by Valentine, wasn't he? And that must have been pretty awful.
I don't know, Clary hesitated. The truth is, he has mixed feelings about it. I think Valentine was a horrible father in a way. But in another way, the little bits of kindness and love he did show were all the kindness and love Jace ever knew. She felt a wave of sadness as she spoke. I think he remembered Valentine with a lot of affection for a long time.
I can't believe Valentine ever showed Jace kindness or love. Valentine's a monster.
Well, yes, but Jace is his son, and he was just a little boy. I think Valentine did love him in his way.
No.
Sebastian's voice was sharp. I'm afraid that's impossible. Clary blinked and almost turned around to see his face, but then thought better of it.
All shadow hunters were sort of crazy on the topic of Valentine. She thought of the Inquisitor and shuddered inwardly, and she could hardly blame them.
You're probably right.
We're here, Sebastian said abruptly.
So abruptly that Clary wondered if she really had offended him somehow, and slid down from the horse's back. But when he looked up at her, he was smiling.
We made good time, he said, tying the reins to the lower branch of a nearby tree. Better than I thought we would.
He indicated with a gesture that she should dismount, and after a moment's hesitation, Clary slid off the horse and into his arms. She clutched him as he caught her, her legs unsteady after the long ride. Sorry, she said sheepishly. I didn't mean to grab you.
I wouldn't apologize for that.
His breath was warm against her neck, and she shivered. His hands lingered just a moment longer on her back before he reluctantly let go. All this wasn't helping Clary's legs feel any steadier.
Thanks, she said, knowing full well she was blushing, and wishing heartily that her fair skin didn't show color so readily.
So, this is it? She looked around. They were standing in a small valley between low hills. There were a number of gnarled-looking trees ranged around a clearing. Their twisted branches had a sculptural beauty against the steel-blue sky, but otherwise...
There's nothing here, she said with a frown. Clary, concentrate.
You mean a glamour? But I don't usually have to...
Glamours in Idris are often stronger than they are elsewhere. You may have to try harder than you usually do.
He put his hands on her shoulders and turned her gently. Look at the clearing. Clary silently performed the mental trick that allowed her to peel glamour from the thing it disguised. She imagined herself rubbing turpentine on a canvas, peeling away layers of paint to reveal the true image underneath. And there it was. A small stone house with a sharply gabled roof, smoke twisting from the chimney in an elegant curlicue. A winding path lined with stones led up to the front door. As she looked, the smoke puffing from the chimney stopped curling upward and began to take on the shape of a wavering black question mark.
Sebastian laughed. I think that means, who's there?
Clary pulled her coat closer around her. The wind, blowing across the level grass, wasn't that brisk, but there was ice in her bones nevertheless. It looks like something out of a fairy tale.
Are you cold?
Sebastian put an arm around her. Immediately the smoke curling from the chimney stopped forming itself into question marks and began puffing out in the shape of lopsided hearts. Clary ducked away from him, feeling both embarrassed and somehow guilty as if she'd done something wrong. She hurried toward the front walk of the house, Sebastian just behind her. They were halfway up the front path when the door flew open. Despite having been obsessed with finding Ragnar Fell ever since Madeline had told her his name, Clary had never stopped to picture what he might look like.
A large, bearded man, she would have thought, if she'd thought about it at all.
Someone who looked like a Viking, with big, broad shoulders. But the person who stepped out of the front door was tall and thin, with short, spiky dark hair. He was wearing a gold mesh vest and a pair of silk pajama pants. He regarded Clary with mild interest, puffing gently on a fantastically large pipe as he did so. Though he looked nothing at all like a Viking, he was instantly and totally familiar. Magnus Bane. But... Clary looked wildly over at Sebastian, who seemed as astonished as she was. He was staring at Magnus with his mouth slightly open, a blank look on his face. Finally, he stammered,
Are you Ragnar Fell, the warlock?
Magnus took the pipe out of his mouth.
Well, I'm certainly not Ragnar Fell, the exotic dancer.
Sebastian seemed at a loss for words. Clary wasn't sure what he'd been expecting, but Magnus was a lot to take in.
We were hoping you could help us. I'm Sebastian Verloc, and this is Clarissa Morgenstern. Her mother is Jocelyn Fairchild. I don't care who her mother is, Magnus said. You can't see me without an appointment. Come back later. Next March would be good.
March? Sebastian looked horrified.
You're right, Magnus said. Too rainy. How about June?
Sebastian drew himself upright. I don't think you understand how important this is.
Sebastian, don't bother,
Clary said in disgust. "He's just messing with your head. He can't help us anyway."